Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer. Today I'm joined by Chris Hutton. Chris, how are you doing?
Hi, Nick. Doing well, thanks. Fired up today with all the radical ideas that the ANC has for us to solve load shedding. So let's get into it.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a second. And Sarah Gaughan. Sarah, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, but I think that to be fired up, Chris, we need to get hold of some of that diesel that they want to burn.
No, we're going back to the Stone Age with firing. We're going literally to rub sticks together. I'm ready for it. I'm very environmentally conscious.
How exciting. Before we get into all of the wonderful, exciting plans to end load shedding, we're going to have to talk about something that is probably more impactful and far more interesting, and that is what is going on in Nelson Mandela Bay, also known as Port Elizabeth, also known as Gqeberha. And we are seeing what looks like a pretty dramatic conflict between the city administration, which is currently, I believe, run by an opposition coalition led by the DA, and some of the staff over suspensions of staff. So Nelson Mandela Bay has been hit by a huge series of electricity blackouts, with the mayoral committee member for electricity, Lance Kroetboom, saying the situation is not yet under control, and that these blackouts are an intentional act by employees of the municipality. The mayor, Retief Odendaal, said that the metro is heading for a difficult time, and said that Nelson Mandela Bay Municipality would like to issue residents with a precautionary warning of possible interruptions in the electricity supply and or delays in returning electricity after load shedding. This is a direct result of some employees in the Electricity and Energy Directorate today preventing their colleagues from entering the offices and from doing work. We believe these actions are related to this week's suspension of 7 officials from that directorate for their possible involvement in fraud and corruption. Those suspensions are in relation to what the mayor called the biggest a corruption scheme yet in the history of the administration of PE, which, if anyone has followed that city's story over the past 10 years, knows that there has been a lot of very bad corruption. Apparently, there are lots of staff who are now going on strike or preventing others from going to work in protest of the suspension of these people from the directorate. The city has issued a notice saying that anyone who went off of work would face disciplinary measures, and that they had deployed security services to protect substations. Odendaal also said that staff have been intimidated, and that there was pushback within the electricity department when they started investigating in order to protect the people involved. So we don't obviously know yet whether these allegations are true or not, but I think there's probably a pretty good chance that, you know, there's something to them. Sarah, what do you make of all this? This is pretty dramatic, and I think it shows the vulnerability of some of these local governments to employees who are just not willing to, shall we say, make way for changes.
Well, I think the level of criminality that's happened over the last few years at the top has created a sense of impunity amongst public sector employees. I mean, they go on illegal, unlawful strikes at the drop of a hat, which is, seems to be partly what they're doing here. And intimidation, violence has been rife, but really rife for quite a long time now. So technically, it's very, no, factually, it's very difficult for management to deal with. Technically, what they should, of course, be doing is suspending not only the guys, the 7 guys that they believe are guilty of corruption, but they should be suspending the people who went on strike and closed, you know, prevented people from coming to work for those acts as well. And they should be faced disciplinary hearings, and they should be fired. You see, the problem is you have to create a shock. B is you have to get these people out. C, the difficult thing, of course, is not ending up with a bullet through your head. But otherwise, your control is gone. You may as well cede it to this crowd entirely. So it's about security. It's about police. It's also about which unions represent them, and where the hell are they in trying to resolve this issue? I mean, there is nothing unlawful about an employer Suspending employees who may be guilty of theft or corruption, absolutely entitled to do so, provided they don't lose pay while they're suspended. That is how it's they're entitled to do it, and they then convene hearings as and when. And one probably have to be very crafty about the hearings one convenes, who chairs them, where they are, etc., etc. But you have to break the back of this, because, I mean, I don't know. I think for some fun, they should be charged with all these things plus treason.
So, Chris, what do you make of all this? Because, I mean, this is pretty serious. If the city employees can basically, you know, overrule the elected officials of a city and, you know, dictate policy, it's a pretty severe threat to the good functioning and the sort of democratic nature of our system. And I suspect there's going to be more of this as the politics of the country shakes up, because you've got all these networks that have been very comfortable establishing themselves for decades. And all of a sudden, we've got political change, we've got things moving about, we've got the ANC falling out of power or having to make room for some coalition partner or something like that. And suddenly, what was very certain is no longer so certain. What do you make of the story?
Yeah, there's an element of stability in corruption, if that's how the system works, and the sort of interest networks and cadres and all that sort of stuff, you know, under the guise of things like transformation, when you just give your appointments to your friends and your friends of friends, they can hold that over you at the point where it really matters. So it's definitely become this entrenched thing across all, I think, all if not most industries in the economy, because the state has grown so much. So you, in a macro sense, you raise the stakes for who gets to decide who gets what, who gets employed by the state in various ways, municipal level, provincial and national. It'll take a lot of very hard work to break up those sorts of systems, those incentives, because if you've got low economic growth, broadly speaking, then one of the best ways you can get a job and some sort of income for your family or your friends in your community is by having a job within government, within the state. It's quite protected, especially in the country with very rigid labor laws like we have, with the strength of unions. We see the burden of the public sector wage bill on the national fiscus and the risk that poses to default of defaulting. For example, we always focus on Eskom's debt, but the public sector wages, I think, are another big part of that. So going to take a lot of hard work to break up those sorts of expectations, incentives, and networks. I'm not saying it can't be done, but one shouldn't think it'll change overnight. And this represents, I think, both a risk but an opportunity for possible coalition governments, possible coalition partners to show why things aren't working, how they've been perverted, and what they would do to change that sort of stuff to deliver better alternatives for voters at the polls next year.
So, Sara, I'm sure we're going to see some analysts say this in the lead up to 2024, and you can already see, I think, some people in the ANC saying this, but the sort of argument will be made that, you see, this is the inevitable result of the ANC losing power. This is what happens when you push the ANC into dangerous coalitions with the EFF, or when you let this kind of ragtag group of opposition parties, none of whom are that big, take over government. And that really, you know, this political change isn't really helping anyone, and that's why the ANC should receive yet another mandate from the population, because this time it will learn its lesson, having nearly seen electoral defeat. What do you make of that argument, Sarah?
I don't think the ANC is capable of learning a lesson of any kind whatsoever. So that deals with that argument. The other thing is, if a country's has any hope of retaining or becoming more democratic, it has to take the risk of voting for people who may do a better job than the ANC. And it's a very low bar, because, I mean, the ANC, you know, we're in a state of such destruction. I mean, I think one of the items we looked at was the request by Eskom, we must all use less electricity. I mean, good heavens above, in this current circumstances, how what's left? But the thing is that it is, as I mentioned, it is very tactical, and they probably have to be very, very smart about this. But the local government has to find a way of dealing with these people. And I think it has to, as I said, it has to get the unions in, because it has to show, well, the unions in, whether, or maybe not, but it has to link the union involvement, or the lack of the unions as a tripartite partner, the lack of their doing something about their membership and their links to the ANC. And I think the more the blame could be placed higher up, I think that's must. I think there is nothing wrong with it, and I think I'd have to think through very sort of strategically what they should do, but no, there's no way. I mean, otherwise, what you're saying is the ANC has destroyed this country, but because of the entrenched networks and the criminality and the violence that has come with it, is such an influential part of our lives. We must keep the ANC in power, so that we don't all get assassinated for whatever reason whatsoever. It's just not an issue. We have to.
Right. I think of it if to use a sort of metaphor, you know, the country has a terminal illness, and the ANC, sticking with the ANC, is kind of like just managing that decline. You're going to have a slow and steady decline in your condition until you pass away, whereas going with an opposition coalition or even an ANC-EFF coalition is actually, it's like a dangerous operation. It might kill the patient, but it also might be the only thing that can save them. And when your option is between slow, managed, inevitable death and risky chaos, I think it's probably risky chaos is actually the logical choice. Chris, any final thoughts before we move on?
No, just to support your point, I'm not saying it's for people who have now maybe just been battered into the sort of submission because of a lack of service delivery, you know, high crime, high unemployment, you know, for people who can afford it, you're sort of protected from these things to an extent. But for many, very many people, you know, this day to day is so difficult, you might just go for the sort of short term solution, which is going for whoever promises you, you know, the quote unquote most. But then the burden is on, you know, people like us, especially to point to the long-term sustainability that could come from some alternatives. I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but there has to be some kind of seeking for different solutions versus what we've, I think, maybe become too used to and have accepted.
All right, so let's move on to our next story. And this is, sorry to mention it briefly, the ongoing troubles with Eskom, where we've seen our beloved president, Cyril Ramaphosa, issue one of his great ideas for how to help the nation, which is that everyone must switch off their geysers when they can to reduce the draw on electricity. And Eskom itself has said that it's wants to look at ramping up its demand-side management initiatives in order to better manage the supply and demand of electricity in South Africa. During an Indaba, the board chairperson of Eskom said that they basically want to enhance their efforts to get South Africans to reduce the amount of electricity they use across the country, and that this would be, you know, a bit of a win-win for everyone. If the country was using less electricity, it would help them to reduce the amount of load shedding, of course, there is, and manage the system better. Chris, your thoughts?
If you look at how deindustrialized the country has already become because of years of Eskom not performing, I don't know if it's going to make that much benefit for people to switch off their geysers for, you know, the 2 hours of power that they already have to deal with in a day. On stage 6, 7, 8, you've got such little time to do anything in your house that, you know, is it really going to make that much of a difference? If you're being load shedded, whatever the correct term is, from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m., you know, and then again by 12 p.m., we're going to switch on your geyser. So, yeah, it's infuriating, but it points to just the lack of any problem solving on the part of the ANC, because that means letting go of the control that you have over a state monopoly on electricity generation and distribution. Now you can come with these small ideas of like, oh, switch off your geysers, switch off your lights at certain times, that'll help, instead of allowing actual competition in electricity generation and distribution. So useful to indicate the complete bankruptcy of ANC ideology and policy solutions.
It's just so infuriating because, I mean, partly I believe that South Africa has actually, since the beginning of load shedding, reduced the amount of electricity it uses, because understandably, people have made plans, people have made alternative arrangements, technology has advanced to allow, you know, energy saving technologies and light bulbs and all that kind of stuff. So we are actually using less power already. But as you say, this is really not fixing the problem. Plus, Eskom is in this enormous financial hole, and if demand is reduced, they're going to be able to sell less electricity, which means they're only going to get deeper into the financial hole. It's so boneheaded as to... Zara, do you have any thoughts on this?
I think the easiest thing would be for them to switch off our electricity. They can do it for us. We don't have to do it ourselves. They can plunge us into complete darkness and pops your uncle. But as you say, the ability to earn from distributing electricity will be somewhat compromised. I think what's most annoying for me is that, you know, Cyril Ramaphosa trots out cliches and homilies literally in lieu of providing any solutions to problems. And they are almost always done in the third person. This has happened, or this is happening, or the country is facing. It's never, we have stuffed up completely and utterly. We beg your forgiveness. Please turn off your electricity. I mean, it's... You know, it's not as if we can, like, get rid of them tomorrow if they make an apology. But, although that's a really nice idea. But it's that sort of, it's a common, I'm not even sure if they're treating us like fools. I just think they are so bereft of ideas as to literally how to move forward without actually capitulating to a free market environment, that they come out with these sort of somewhere between soft, fuzzy nonsense pieces and absolute rubbish that has no factual basis. So I almost can't read stories like this anymore, just because it's like,
And the problems don't end there for Eskom, as I'm sure we know. But here's another little detail of what's going on at the moment. So Eskom is desperately trying to get together 30 billion rand from which to buy diesel for its open cycle gas turbines, which are one of the things that I think they save us two stages of load shedding when they're running, but they use this enormous amount of diesel. And up till now, they've been buying it from Petro SA, which is a state-owned company. So another sort of SOE. But in order to get more petrol cheaper, they're looking at buying directly from the wholesalers. However, this is going to cause a huge problem for Petro SA, which would see an enormous loss of its revenue if Eskom switches to a cheaper wholesaler. So once again, the sort of state-centric approach of the ANC of kind of having everything going through these state-owned enterprises and everything being centralized is going to cause yet another problem when Petro SA inevitably goes into some huge financial tailspin because of this. Chris, what do you make of that?
No, I don't really know what to... how to say it any... I don't know.
Sorry, any final thoughts?
No, I just thought about Petro SA. You know, when Tina Jemat-Peterson was in charge of it, they sold, like the family jewels. Why do we even have Petro SA? Why don't they just sell up and close down? I mean, surely these, you know, Eskom can go to the Shell pump or the BP pump and get its diesel, and I don't know, you know, just make life easier for everybody.
According to Chris Yellen, this idea was proposed originally by actually Andre de Reiter, has now been picked up by the electricity minister Ramaphosa, and last time, and probably this time too, the whole thing was shut down by Guedimantashe, who's sort of much more old style communist who wants to have control of everything. So good job, guys. Another great policy success for the ANC. Okay, let us move on to our next story. And this is another one of these ones that just makes you want to sort of bash your head against the wall. And this comes from a media statement put out, I think, by the DA, complaining about the appointment, or rather reappointment, of a number of members to the board of the South African Post Office. Well, as anyone who's followed the fortunes of the South African Post Office over the past few years knows, it's not in a great state. The organization, like many of our kind of state organs, is on the verge of some sort of collapse. It's not really able to do its job properly. It sort of sometimes works, sometimes maybe. It's kind of a 50-50 chance when you send stuff through the mail. And this has hurt businesses. It's hurt particularly poorer people who don't have access to courier services, that kind of stuff. But the government has seen fit to reappoint the exact board who have destroyed the organization. Sarah, what do you make of this?
You know, the thing about the post office is that, as you said, I mean, it did well. It was making, you know, its assets exceeded its liabilities, and it was sort of going along. And it's actually quite an interesting sort of business. It's truly spread around the country, and theoretically, and I think this was probably originally Mark Barnes's idea, was to, you know, really make use of what you had and to do better. Does anyone know who these guys are on the board? You know, does one even seen a picture of them? I haven't. And as things have got worse and worse, you've assumed, as one is entitled to, that a fish rots from the head. And sure enough, the fish has rotted from the head, and the post office is in deep trouble. But maybe it's a sign of, from the communications minister, that, you know, they have no hope for the post office, so they may as well put the same idiots back to run it until it's run down to empty. A case can be made for it being a public enterprise, but a case cannot be made for anyone who's currently in public enterprises, because nobody's done a good job of anything. And it seems a bit sad for some people, that losing that access will be huge. But, it's like, I don't even know what it, I'm thinking I'm going to do with the Chris. I don't know what the hell. He's thinking. Unless he's bored and tired. I don't know.
South African politics feels an awful lot like that movie Groundhog Day, where it's just kind of, you sort of wake up and you're in this horrific stasis where nothing has ever changed. You can imagine that, you know, a cynical ANC that was perhaps not so completely frozen in place and just sort of caught in the stasis would at least say, well, you know, let's find some other cadres we can put in the board, and we'll redeploy the ones who were on the board to somewhere else so that they can, you know, be at least out of the public spotlight for a little while, and then we can pretend like we're renewing everything, even if you don't really have an intention to change anything. It would be good PR. But presumably the corruption networks and whatever are so entrenched and so difficult to deal with that it's just like, yeah, well, we'll just leave it because it's too much of a headache to change anything. Chris, what do you make of this?
Yeah, this feeds into our first topic and our first story, where if this is the only way that you can sort of get ahead, you wouldn't want to compete in any particular competitive job space in the private sector, then why not just make sure that you continue and have that influence that you need to get a particular appointment within whatever government state, arm of government or government institution. So it makes sense from that point of view. You sort of have your job security and you're fine. I agree with you very much on the PR point, but there I'd only push back on the point where you're assuming they're concerned with optics and actual people thinking that they're taking responsibility and they care about doing a good job. I don't think that is particularly where many of them are at this point in time. This is not directly linked, but I tried to make this point over the weekend where people are getting frustrated with Ramaphosa. He had this new mandate after the ANC elective conference and he was now going to push his ideas. And then I link this to this idea of switching a few geezers. He's doing a very good job. People are getting frustrated that he and others in government are not doing a good job. They're doing a good job extending their controls, ensuring that they've got protections and whatever they need for however long they can manage over patronage networks. In that way, he and many of them are doing a very good job.
So I think let's move on to our last story for today. And this is the ongoing shenanigans in Joburg. It looks like Gayton McKenzie's criticism of the El Jamaha mayor, Tapelo Ahmad, has borne fruit, with Tapelo Ahmad, who was elected by the ANC, the PA, the EFF, the ATM, the AIC, and sort of the ANC fellow traveler parties, as the mayor of Johannesburg to replace St. Paul Palatse. Well, this morning he resigned as mayor of Johannesburg just ahead of a motion of no confidence in him, which was, I think, put forward by Action SA, and the PA said it was going to support because they didn't think he was a very good mayor. Well, it's not clear how much is going to change in the city, who the new mayoral candidate is going to be. The ANC coalition there It's not clear who their candidate is, although they're likely to win because, as far as I understand, the negotiations between the Patriotic Alliance and the sort of DA Action SA coalition didn't go anywhere. And so the ANC will probably retain control of the city, but it remains to be seen whether they'll put someone from Al Jamaha back or whether they'll find some other small party. Maybe the someone from the AIC will get put in as mayor now this time. But it kind of... I think I can't remember who was sharing it. Someone on one of our internal WhatsApp groups shared this list of all the mayors that Johannesburg has had since 2019. And it's been a real kind of disaster in terms of the stability of the city. And we've sort of seen this jerking back and forth. I believe the DA is probably going to put in Paul Palazzo up again as a candidate, although she's likely to lose. Chris, what do you make of all this? I mean, once again, we come back to this question of, you know, is the ANC's loss of a majority actually improved things for the citizens of Johannesburg?
If you measure it based on improvement in service delivery, I mean, fixing of roads, water issues, water leaks, electricity, no. By that standard, it has not been a substantive or measurable improvement for the citizens of Johannesburg. That doesn't mean that over the long term it couldn't have been improved and righted if you have a sense of stability, but the right kind of stability, not stability in terms of just persistent corruption, but stability where people actually focus on service delivery, about the responsibility of the office of sort of public administration, that sort of stuff. It could have improved very big backlogs and all that sort of stuff, deep financial trouble. So that could have been improved over the longer term if you had that sort of element of stability. I do think this is useful for reinforcing perhaps the particular ideology, if you want to call it that, that Gates and McKenzie seems to adhere to, which from my point of view is sort of brute pragmatism and power plays, just going with whatever suits him at a particular point in time and what he thinks can maximize his position. I do sort of want to throw this out there. If it does materialize, you know, like sound all clever and whatever. If it doesn't, then but don't rule out Gaten McKenzie as deputy president after 2024.
Oh boy, that would be something. It was also very funny, Sarah, the way the ANC coalition announced the sort of resignation of Tapelo Ahmad, despite the fact that he was basically being forced to resign because one of their own coalition partners thought that he was a fool. They thanked him for his selfless leadership. They credited him with recovering the city's financial position, and they said that he was a selfless leader committed to the residents of the city of Johannesburg. What do you make of all this?
Did he last longer than Liz Truss? Just wondering.
It's a very similar period of time, isn't it? I'll have to look it up.
You see, the sad thing for him is that, you know, I'm afraid, you know, mayor's a fairly big position, and you've kind of got to have some experience of the environment you work in and knowledge and life experience in general. A very young man, probably not very particularly talented, coming from a small party. I think it's quite an interesting exercise for the ANC and the EFF. There's obviously a plan in putting no-name brand mayor people in the mayoralty, you know, whether it's Tshwane or Joburg or wherever it may be. But I think one of the problems they're going to find is they're putting in people that they have don't know at all and have no faith in whether they can do the job, and it might actually come back to bite them. Because, of course, you know, the intelligent thing he Ahmad did was he jumped before he could, you know, before he could be pushed through a motion of no confidence. But it's
but the ANC said that they're not afraid at all of the motion of no confidence. They're going to crush it, and there's no way that. He's not running away at all. He's just resigning for unrelated reasons.
No, I mean, look, you know, that sort of those sort of comments make them look as, you know, supers as having made the decision to put him in the first place. I don't know what it's like. It's like it really is like playing at politics. I mean, it's such an insult to watch the ANC and the EFF work. And one accepts, you know, politics is a bit of a dirty game. You know, things have to be done to achieve certain things. But Wow, you know, the only thing these guys deserve is to be out of power.
So, my part literally just went out as you said that. So all I can say, thank goodness it's a short
And they
week.
should be out of it.
And we'll be back tomorrow on the Daily French Show. Cheers, everyone.